You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I can now officially say we are less than a week away from the 2018 NBA Draft. Six is the magic number next Thursday inside the Golden One Center, a massive draft party here in Sacramento where I hope you, Kings fans, will all be to celebrate who the Kings take at number two overall. And with the whispers and the rumors and the more information we learn on a daily basis, seemingly on an hourly basis, nobody continues to know what the Sacramento Kings are going to do at number two. That's terrifying and exciting at the same time. Hello, everybody. My name is Matt George. Welcome to the Locked On Kings podcast. This podcast is your hub for Sacramento Kings offseason coverage, talk, interviews, news. We have it all right here for you, and that goes all year long. That means as soon as we get to training camp and into the next season, we're going to pick up even more, gain even more steam. There's a lot going on here in Sacramento this summer into next fall, and we hope that you can be a part of it right here with us on the Locked On Kings podcast. My name is Matt George. I'm from Sports 1140 KHTK as an on-air talent and a multimedia journalist. If you're not familiar with that radio station, it's the flagship radio station of the Sacramento Kings, and it has personalities on it, including Grant Napier, the TV play-by-play broadcaster of the Kings. Also, Doug Christie, the TV color commentator of the Kings and former Sacramento King himself. Also, Jason Ross, the former host of this very podcast. Jason Ross started the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I had the privilege of taking the torch from him when he was ready to pass it on. It's a privilege to have all of you who are back returning, and for those of you that are new, welcome. So glad to have you here and for you to be a part of this podcast. I say it every single week, so I'm just going to make it brief for those of you that think I just repeat myself on a daily basis. This podcast is for you. This is your platform to share your thoughts and to share your feelings and your opinions and everything, to just talk Kings. I am not talking down to you. This is not everybody listen to me, the village idiot or the village crier, although I can be the village idiot at time to time. This is a place for us to engage in conversation. And how do you do that? On Twitter, at MattGeorgeKHDK. You can reach me there. Or you can email me, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. That's saclocalmedia.com. I have a great interview for you today. Yesterday, I had a great conversation with Dave King from Phoenix, and you got the Phoenix Suns perspective on what they're going to be doing with the number one overall pick and what that fan base wants and potentially what direction they're going in, and also their ideas or their thoughts on the Sacramento Kings franchise. Going to do the same except from the Atlanta Hawks perspective. The Hawks, of course, picking after the Kings at number three in the draft. We're going to be talking with Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks, the Locked On Hawks podcast, which I encourage you to check out to get their perspective. He does phenomenal work over there. That's one of our sister podcasts here, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. He is also the editor-in-chief of Peachtree Hoops, which is the SB Nation site for the Atlanta Hawks. So he has his finger firmly on the pulse of what the Atlanta Hawks fan base wants with the number three overall pick and what the Atlanta Hawks franchise is trying to do at number three. So enough of me rambling. Enjoy this conversation that I had with Mr. Rowland, and we'll come back on the other side. Love to get your responses to everything as well. You can tweet. If you want to pause this podcast, if you have a question or any kind of take, send it anytime at MattGeorgeKHTK. You can do that. But listen to this conversation. Get a great perspective on the Atlanta Hawks and what they are thinking about doing with the number three overall pick. One of the best parts about the Locked On Podcast Network is that every single NBA team has their own podcast. And I know many of you, being the Locked On Kings and being Kings fans, aren't necessarily always interested in the perspectives of other teams. And I try and tell you any bit that I can, if you can listen to and get perspectives of other teams around the league, not only will you personally learn a lot about that market, about that franchise, but you'll also learn about a lot about your own personal franchise. I've come on this podcast and on the KHDK airwaves a number of times and told you that some of the best parts of my job are getting to work with opposing radio broadcasts when they come to Sacramento, because you hear their perspective of where the Kings are at and you learn a lot more about what the rest of the world thinks about this team here in Sacramento. So I have a privilege here to invite on the host of the Locked On Hawks. That's Brad Rowland. He is also the editor-in-chief of Peachtree Hoops, the SB Nation website for the Atlanta Hawks there. And Brad is going to provide us with some perspective of what the Atlanta Hawks and their fan base are thinking at that three spot, what he and the rest of Atlanta may want at that spot. And ultimately, I hope I can get his perspective on what the Sacramento Kings are doing so we can learn a little bit more about what Atlanta thinks of our team all the way over here on the other side of the country in sunny California. Brad, thank you so much for taking the time. Welcome to Locked On Kings. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, it's my pleasure as well. Always happy to talk some NBA basketball, and the draft is one of my favorite things of the year, so I'm very excited. Even if it's kind of a crazy time right now, I'm sure it is for you guys as well.
I tell you what, man, as soon as the Sacramento Kings got the luck of the draw, really, in the draft lottery and fell all the way to number two, they rose all the way to number two. It's been pandemonium here in Sacramento with the number two pick, making the right decisions. Of course, it's exciting for both of these teams to be in the top three, but Brad, we all know with the excitement of being a top three team comes a lot of pressure. We are certainly feeling it here in Sacramento. I'm sure Vlade and the rest of the Kings front office are feeling it. But how about in Atlanta? How much pressure is on this team to get this draft right?
There's some, to be sure. I think there might be more in Sacramento just because of just the way, how long it's been, obviously, for the Kings. I have to imagine, you know, being as far away as I am, I don't necessarily know like you would, but the Hawks have a little bit of a longer leash, I would imagine, because they were in the playoffs for so long. And even, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, they were a pretty good basketball team. This last year was kind of rough, year one of a rebuild. And, you know, there's still that grace period for the new front office with Travis Schlenk as the GM, where, you know, he did a very nice job last year in the draft. They found a gem in John Collins at number 19 that kind of gave Schlenk and the front office a bit of credibility with the fan base, I will say. I think they trust him right now. But in the same breath, this is the first time the Hawks had a top five pick in a very, very long time. The last time I did that was Al Horford. So it's been a long while here. And I think, you know, one of the big things of this rebuild that the Hawks have been preaching is that they want to have multiple picks so they can have multiple swings. But when you try to tell a Hawks fan that, they don't really want to hear it right now. All they want to know is who's going to number three and whether it's going to work or not. So I think there is some pressure, even if it's not quite as overwhelming as it might be for us in other places.
Brad, you brought up the grace period of a new general manager, and that's something that Vlade either burnt through really quickly or didn't really have much to begin with here in Sacramento. A lot of that is associated with the fact that the Kings are now the longest drought in the NBA after the Timberwolves made the playoffs last year. The longest drought in the NBA of not being in the playoffs, so Vlade unfortunately had to inherit the impatience of fans. But even 2 or 3 years out of the playoffs and fan bases start to get a little anxious, it wasn't too long ago that Atlanta had that team that was first in the Eastern Conference, made that fantastic run. Ultimately, we're not able to get past LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and we all know how that story's been going in the Eastern Conference. But how quickly are Hawks fans expecting things to turn around? How much time are you willing to give this Hawks rebuild?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think the people that wanted the rebuild are prepared for it and want to allow, you know, 3-4 years to let this thing sort of cook in the way that it probably needs to. But there was definitely a faction of the fan base that was not comfortable with rebuilding, and they kind of just wanted things to be okay and have the team be pretty good. And, you know, everything sort of went downhill in the summer of 2016 for the Hawks when they signed Dwight Howard, and none of that stuff went well. And that sort of sped the timeline up a little bit. But this team was always going to need a rebuild at some point. They did all the amazing things that they were able to do without this, like, certified, you know, top flight superstar. And, you know, with all due respect to Al Horford and Paul Millsap, who I love as players, neither one of those guys is going to necessarily be moving the needle in terms of fan interest. They're just very, very good basketball players. So I think, you know, the leash is kind of long for people that are prepared, but there is a segment of the fan base that never wanted the rebuild in the first place, and they're already looking at their watch after 1 year, kind of saying, all right, it's time to get this thing back on track. And I think those are probably the same people that are putting all their eggs in this one basket and, you know, I guess expecting almost to get this, like, you know, star-level player right away and sort of speed the rebuild up. I've been trying to get them to slow down a little bit in their expectations, but at the same time, it's just kind of fans being fans, and they see a top three pick and they assume it's going to be the next great thing.
You know, I'm curious about your opinion on this, Brad, because it seems like a lot of the league, Sacramento Kings included, are in waited out mode. And what I mean by that is they're trying to put together a team of young players to develop into a core that will hopefully take the mantle away from the Warriors and from these super teams right now when they eventually break apart or one player leaves. Or you figure the Warriors and the Cavaliers or the Warriors and whatever team LeBron's on in the East can't be at the top forever. Are the Atlanta Hawks also making that approach a little bit? Like, yes, we have 3 or 4 years to work with to build a core so that by 2021, when the Warriors are a thing of the past and when the Eastern Conference is looking for the next juggernaut, we're right in that conversation.
Yeah, I think organizationally they understand this is going to take a while. I mean, they're careful to sort of say that out loud, and that I think a lot of the fan base would not be terribly happy if they said it out loud.
Right.
But you know, Travis Schlenk's actually came from Golden State, was a lieutenant under Bob Myers there, and certainly he understands what they're dealing with and the fact that the Hawks are a long way away from being competitive with a team like the Warriors. So I think he definitely sees the big picture, and when he was hired, you know, he basically was immediately given free rein from the ownership group to go ahead and do the teardown. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, within a couple of weeks when he was hired, it was very clear they were going to rebuild. The first signal was that they traded Dwight Howard for basically nothing, and after that, it was very clear they were going in this direction. So he definitely sold the ownership group, and that sort of bleeds down to the fact that everybody sort of understands what's going on at this point in time. I'm not sure it's specifically designed to wait out the Warriors, but that's probably a side product of it, and that I think he just understands that this is going to be a patient rebuild. It's all about sort of taking more swings and optimizing your odds to knock down a top 10 kind of player in the league, and you have to just sort of find that guy or two or three of those players to be able to compete. So they know that, and as a result of that, they're going to be very patient right now.
I can't speak for all of the Sacramento Kings fan base, but the healthy majority, I would say, at least on social media, is in the Luka Doncic corner. They want Doncic here in Sacramento. Is there a guy at that three spot that you're hearing the most noise from Atlanta Hawks fans, a guy that for sure is the fan favorite to come to Atlanta in this draft?
I think it's actually very split. I will say at this point, Doncic is probably the leader in the clubhouse in terms of fan voting, if you had to do that kind of thing right now, if he was available at three. Part of that is that people don't think he's necessarily going to fall to three. But if he was, I think he's sort of the pipe dream guy. But listen, it's sort of flip-flopped a number of different times over the last few months. It was definitely Marvin Bagley for a while. I think a lot of that is just the fact that he was a big name from Duke and a very, very productive, you know, points, rebounds kind of player in college. There's definitely a Trae Young segment of the population in Atlanta that wants the Steph Curry-like kind of guy who can come in and score right away and dish out assists. And then there's also the defense-first Jaren Jackson, Mo Bamba camp. So I think it's pretty splintered. It's definitely not quite as unanimous as it seems to be out there in Sacramento. But I think if I had to pick a guy that the Hawks fans want the most, it's probably Doncic, but it definitely is not hugely there's not this huge gap like there is some other places.
Speaking with Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Hawks and also the editor-in-chief of Peachtree Hoops, that's SB Nation's site for the Atlanta Hawks. Continuing with this conversation, is there a guy in your mind, your perfect scenario of who you would love to see Atlanta take, not just the fans' perspective, your perspective specifically, and then vice versa to that, is there the realistic side of this is the guy I expect to be in a Hawks jersey following next Thursday?
Yeah, for me, it's Doncic. He'd be the guy that I would take at three. I actually have him number one on my personal board. It is a situation where he's like this no doubt number one pick. I don't think in my mind, but for me, he's number one. It has been for a while. Part of that's just having a high floor and being someone who I think can be transformative offensively in a lot of different ways. With that said, everybody, including Doncic in this class, has some warts on them somewhere along the way. So I understand opposing viewpoints. It's not a situation where I'm, you know, standing on the mountain screaming about Doncic. I do think he's the best player and should be the pick if he's available at three. In the same breath, I understand some other viewpoints. Realistically, you know, it's tough. You know, for a while there, as soon as the lottery hit, I think people were assuming that Doncic was not going to be available for number three, and that led to a lot of speculation about other guys, chiefly sort of a dual argument about, you know, Marvin Bagley and Jaren Jackson at number three overall. And on that side of the equation, I kind of lean Jackson. I think the Hawks might be leaning Jackson as well, although they've been linked to Bagley for a while. So the Hawks have a very, very long history of being good at avoiding leaks, and that goes across three different regimes now, from Danny Ferry to Mike Budenholzer and now to Travis Schlenk. They've been very good at not getting a lot of information leaking out of there in terms of what they're actually going to do. So, I mean, I think realistically, one of the Jackson Bagley tier is what I've been expecting for a while. But I will say, if Doncic is available and they don't take him, it will hurt a little. It will hurt me a little bit, just because I think he'd be the guy I'd go with.
I'm so happy that you brought up leaks, because that has been an issue that the Sacramento Kings franchise, at least the old regime in the front office, dealt with a lot, and it actually came back to bite them in the butt a lot. Now this new regime is keeping their cards close to their chest. Things are really quiet on the Sacramento end. There's plenty of speculation, but one of the bright spots I saw is a recent mock draft came out by Sports Illustrated, and what they said in the opening paragraphs of that mock draft was that Luka Doncic was the guy they expect to go at number two, but nobody really knows what the Sacramento Kings are going to do. You brought up it's a similar situation with the Atlanta Hawks at three. Do we over-exaggerate that as a big deal, or do you really think there's a lot of benefits and it's almost a power position to keep things in-house and for nobody else to really know what your franchise is going to be doing?
I think it's an advantage, to be sure, especially if you're talking about trades, because, you know, Travis Schlenk, the GM, talked about how there's been discussions of trades since basically lottery night, when all the GMs were in the same place. Like, you know, not necessarily overly formal discussions, but if you're trying to play your cards close to the vest and try to maximize your position, you don't want anybody to know what you're going to be doing. And, you know, people always ask me, like, I'm going to know what the Kings are doing. That's one of the questions that I keep getting, and you'll probably find that funny. But, you know, if everybody assumes DeAndre Ayton goes number one to the Suns, naturally Hawks fans are going to want to know what the Kings are going to do at number two, because that takes somebody off the board that the Hawks can't take. So obviously don't know what the Kings are going to do. I don't know what the Hawks are going to do, but it's a situation where it's sort of a microcosm of where, like, a team can have a lot more power in trade negotiations and kind of just holding things over if nobody knows what they're going to do. I think going back to the Danny Ferry era, when the Hawks were really building that really strong team, they were famous for never leaking anything. It's not been quite as locked up since then, but they've still been very good about avoiding it. I think that's just an organizational culture thing. They just want to be very private and be very matter of fact. Even, you know, before the last couple of years, really before this year, they haven't even releasing workout info. It's been, you have to kind of go in the dark and rely on agents and players to sort of leak out when workouts are going to happen. This year, they've been more open about that, but that's how far it had gone in the past. Like, they just don't like anything getting out. And I understand that as a mindset. I think it gets a little bit silly sometimes, but in the draft, there are some covert advantages.
Like I mentioned in the intro, Brad, I am fascinated by the perspectives of outsiders, isn't necessarily the right term, but those that are outside Sacramento that are privy enough to how the league works to have a educated opinion or an idea about the Sacramento Kings franchise, but obviously they're not deeply ingrained in this Sacramento community as I am. So I'm always wanting to learn what they would do or their thoughts or where they think that the Kings are at. So I have a couple questions in regards to that, but starting with this one, if you are the GM of the Kings, or if you're looking at the Kings situation and them being at two, assuming DeAndre Ayton goes number one overall, what would you do in the Kings situation? What makes the most sense based off of your knowledge of this franchise, of who they should take and continuing with their rebuild?
You know, barring a trade offer that I just don't know, obviously, and that no one would be privy to, I would just take Doncic. I think he's the best player. I understand the fit there with De'Aaron Fox wouldn't be perfect in a lot of ways, because both guys have some, you know, there's some similar strengths and weaknesses in a lot of ways. And, you know, Fox's jump shot's been an open question. Doncic is sort of the same way. And those guys don't necessarily are not perfect fits together. But for me, you just take the best player available if you're the Kings, unless there's just an obvious fit issue. And I don't think that's necessarily the case with Doncic. I don't think he'd be blocked by anybody that's already on the squad, et cetera. So I think it'd be pretty simple for me in just taking the best player. But I do understand the pull of upside in a couple of different directions. There's a couple of guys who I would argue probably have higher upside than Doncic perfectly if everything were to fall perfect. So if an organization really values that as an outcome, I get that too. And you might want to look a different direction, especially if you have doubts about Doncic's overall athleticism profile. So yeah, for me, it'd be pretty simple, I do think. But this is a class where there are a number of intriguing guys. They're very, very different. So it's sort of eye of the beholder kind of stuff.
What are your thoughts on Vlade Divac as the general manager and leader of this Kings front office, and then Dave Yeager and his coaching staff being in charge of this team going forward?
I mean, obviously, I'm not going to know like you do, but I mean, it's not, you know, I'm sure you understand sort of the reputation of the Kings around the league. It's not always been the most positive in the world.
Right.
I do think Vlade's been a little bit better recently, I will say. Just, you know, the stuff that you hear around the league, it's not been as divisive. I do think this pick will be interesting, what the reaction is, especially if they go off the board to where the consensus is. You're going to hear a lot of, ha-ha kind of King stuff. I don't necessarily think that's always fair, because I think everybody's board's different. But Vladdy's never been somebody that I thought was, was terrible at his job by any means. It's just a situation where you have to, at some point, until the Kings are back in the playoffs, you're going to get some of that laughing and pointing, regardless of what happens, because of the previous stuff. And, of course, there was the ill-fated Sixers trade when Vladdy first got there that is sort of legendary at this point, in time, which I'm sure you've heard and litigated plenty. Dave Yeager, I've always kind of liked, honestly, but of course, I will say again, I'm not necessarily as dialed in the Kings as everybody that would be listening to this podcast is. Never been a guy who I've had a huge problem with, nor do I think he's this like elite coach either. I think he's sort of a run-of-the-mill, relatively average NBA head coach, which there's nothing really wrong with that. It's just something that's not going to be moving the needle a great deal. And as someone who just covered a coaching search that ended up with someone that most people did not recognize really at all in Lloyd Pierce, I can sort of see the pluses and minuses of having a head coach that's kind of an unknown. Yeager's, of course, he's much more known than that, but someone who I think nationally doesn't have too much of a profile.
Last thing, Kings related, Brad, and I appreciate you on the spot sharing these thoughts. I know these are curveballs that I'm throwing at you for someone who is a Atlanta Hawks reporter and someone who covers that team all the way across the country. But before this draft takes place, the core of De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Buddy Hield, and let's say Willie Cauley-Stein, that core, what can you see and what are your thoughts on what this team is trying to do with that young group of players?
Yeah, I think it's a situation where I kind of like all those guys individually. I think it's a nice starting block, especially I'm a big fan of De'Aaron Fox. I always liked him, and I thought that was a good pick last year when they made it. I just think on that roster, I have a hard time seeing the number one guy.
Yes.
And it's probably something that you've heard before. So, yep. I mean, it's a situation where the Hawks are kind of into, and they actually have even fewer guys than the Kings do that I would say are building blocks. But it's all about getting the number one guy. You can have all the structure you want and have all these nice supporting pieces. And I think Fox could be more than just a pure supporting piece. But I'd be pretty surprised if he was the number one guy on a real contending kind of team. So it's all about getting that guy, and that's a very, very simple answer that I'm sure you've heard in a number of different ways. But in the end, like, I can like all those guys, and I actually kind of do like all those players individually, but until you get that that top-tier piece or two, it's all kind of just window dressing.
Finally, Brad, some Sacramento speculation for you. I shared this before we got on the air together. This is no more than speculation. I'm not sharing any insider information. I'm just going off of the winds and the things that are being whispered around Sacramento, and we're hearing more and more about Michael Porter Jr. here, which might be music to your ears as a Luka Doncic fan, the fact that he could fall as far as three and end up in an Atlanta Hawks uniform. I'm sure a lot of listeners to this podcast cringed when I just said that. But what are your thoughts on Michael Porter Jr.? The injury concerns are obviously there. Back surgery is a serious thing, and we've never heard of back problems just magically going away. They always seem to linger a little bit. But take away the injuries, Michael Porter Jr. has been touted as one of the best scorers and one of the top prospects that without those injuries could be or probably would be in the conversation for number one overall. I'm curious your thoughts on Michael Porter Jr. not just fall or rising up as far as the number two spot, but just him as a prospect in general.
I can see the upside for sure. And that's a situation where if the Kings just see him as their guy, I can't fault them for taking the guy they want at number two. I think Porter's talent level is commensurate with that kind of investment. The injury is something you just can't ignore. Even if he gets the clean bill of health, just the thought of a lingering back issue on a guy that's 6'10 is never going to fully go away. But talent-wise, as a primary scorer, if that's what the Kings are looking for, you'd be hard-pressed to, argue against that. I think there's a couple guys in this class who have primary scorer upside, whether it be Trae Young as well as another option of that, maybe of Doncic. But I think Porter is probably the best pure scorer in this entire class if you just want to take that into account. And at 6'10 in a wing-driven league that we're in, I can see the allure of that. I've never been as high as everybody else on Porter, but I do see the talent level as a top-five talent level in this class. And if you could get comfortable with the injury stuff and the way that things obviously went did not go great at Missouri, if you're comfortable with him being athletic as athletic as he was back in high school when he was seen as a top three prospect in this class, I can see it. You know, value-wise, it'd be kind of tough in that you just don't hear him associated with those top three, four, five picks a lot. Mm-hmm. So if you take him at two, there's always going to be that, at least that portion of the fan base is probably going to be like, why didn't you trade down and take him later? It's never that easy. I'll be the first to say that. And we hear the same stuff in Atlanta about Trae Young, which because the Hawks have sort of been tied to Trae Young, and you get a lot of that. Just trade back and take him later. I'm like, well, it's never that easy. You can't trade back and assume a guy's going to be there. So in the end, if they fall in love with Michael Porter Jr., you got to take him. I wouldn't necessarily do that, but I can also see the rationale.
That is Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Hawks, also the editor-in-chief of Peachtree Hoops, the SB Nation's site there covering the Atlanta Hawks. You can follow him on Twitter, at BT Rowland. Brad, we'll definitely have to do this again. Best of luck to you and your Hawks on draft night. We'd love to get your takes on everything afterwards, so we'll definitely have to talk in the near future. And then if you ever find yourself in Sacramento, come by, say hi. We'd love to shake your hand in person and wish you the best of luck, except for when the Kings are playing you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and we'll definitely have to talk again soon. I really appreciate it.
My thanks to Brad for taking the time and sharing that with me. I love, like I said in that interview, I love getting outside perspective of the Sacramento Kings franchise. Hopefully you learned as much as I did, or at least a little bit of what I learned from Brad, not just about what the Atlanta Hawks are hoping to do and what they want there at number three, but also what they think about this Sacramento Kings franchise. I challenge you and I encourage you, check out some of the other Locked On podcasts around this podcast network. Team specific, does not matter. You will learn something. And ultimately, I think you will really enjoy all the work that we do around this podcast network. You can also check out, I plugged this yesterday, but you can do it today in case you missed it. Locked On NBA, that podcast did a mock draft. Charles and I were a part of it. The first six picks were on Wednesday. So all six, let's see, 18 picks. I had to do quick math there. 18 picks are now in the books, and you can listen to them all and find out what we on the Locked On Podcast Network think, or how we think this draft is going to go, or how it would go if we were the general managers. It's a lot of fun. You'll get a lot of great perspective there as well. I highly encourage you to check it out. That does it for us this week. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you next week, draft week here in Sacramento. It's going to be fun. Charles and I will have a lot of good co-op content for you leading up to the draft. And then if you are in the local Sacramento area, or if you are a fan of Sports 1140 KHDK, or if you want good stuff to listen to on draft night itself, listen to Sports 1140 KHDK, because Charles and I will be on the radio airwaves from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time after the draft, or really as the second round of the draft is wrapping up. And we'll be sharing our thoughts and responding to what the Kings do, what all the other teams do, engaging a lot of the listeners' thoughts and feelings on the draft itself. So be a part of that. Would love to talk to you and see you there on the KHDK airwaves. But until then, my name is Matt George. Thank you for listening to a great week of Locked On Kings podcast. Next week's going to be even better. It's draft week, like I said, and you can catch it all right here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.